Game on 2FM. With Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thanks to Chris and Kira for getting us through the week. It's Friday, the 3rd of September, and this is Game On. Coming up today, Gavin Casey will preview Katie Taylor's big fight as she returns to the ring in her aim to stay undisputed.
Yeah, I feel great. I know that I can't do this forever, but I still feel very, very fresh right now. I still have plenty more years left in the ring, and this training camp has gone great. I feel sharp and strong, and I can't wait to produce one of the best performances on Saturday night.
The boys in green are back home and back in front of home fans tomorrow. Fergal Brennan and Alan Cawley will preview the Republic of Ireland versus Azerbaijan.
Just for me on a personal level, I really, really needed the crowd back. I was really, really lately enjoying the crowd. I feel like my game changes a little bit when there's fans there. I feel like I'm able to go to kind of a different level of performance. And I'm sure it's probably the same for almost everybody, really. Look, to have the home fans back, it will make a big difference.
Plus, we've Jane Mangan on the return of racing fans, and there's more cycling medals for Team Ireland in Tokyo.
And the Swedish girls really put it to us on the corners, and tried my best to stay as much as I could, but I cannot believe we're after winning double Paralympic champions. Yeah. Oh my God, of almighty. Never in my wildest dreams.
Now, if you want to get in touch, please do so. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
Now, lots to look forward to this weekend. The All-Ireland Ladies Football Final between Dublin and Meath will take centre stage. And Dublin manager Mick Bone has made three changes for that final. He has recalled Niamh Collins and Carla Rowe, who both missed the semi-final victory over Mayo through injury. And there's also a start for fit again Sinead Goldrick. No surprise there. Sinead Goldrick knows how to win All-Ireland finals. While first-time finalists Meath are unchanged from their semi-final over Cork, which they won after extra time. And further GAA news today, Wexford have appointed former Tipperary coach Dara Egan as their new senior hurling manager, taking over from Davy Fitzgerald. Egan was a key part in the Tipperary senior hurling backroom team under Liam Sheedy for the past number of years, and he recently vacated that role when Sheedy stepped down. So interesting times ahead in the world of Gaelic games, especially when it comes to managers over the next few months. Alan Cawley is with me live in studio, and he is fresh from watching Jim Crawford's Republic of Ireland under 21 side beat Bosnia Herzegovina 2-0. Good game, Al.
It was a great result. Good second half. The first half, to be fair, they were probably just sussing each other a little bit out. Bosnia were a decent team as well, Marie. So to go away, it was a tough start to the campaign for Jim. Obviously, it's the first qualification game ahead of their doubleheader against Luxembourg that they have on Tuesday as well. So tough start. But after the first half, which was kind of even, Stephen, they upped it in the second half, and the start of the second half really bright. Ross Tierney winning a couple of free kicks on the edge of the box, which led to the winning of the penalty from JJ Coyote, got bundled over in the box from the rebound from the free kick, and Tyreek Wright stood up and tucked it away. Really kind of a lot of conviction, tucked it away comprehensively, really good goal. And then in the to be fair, Bosnia responded quite well. They had to weather a little bit of a storm for 10 or 15 minutes, but then a brilliantly well-worked set-piece goal from a corner kick won the day for them, really. And it was Gavin Kilkenny, who was probably their man of the match. He was brilliant, Kilkenny. I even mentioned in the commentary, and looking at him again today, I was actually surprised he wasn't called up to the senior squad. I think he's nearly ready for that level now, Marie. He was head and shoulders above everyone on the pitch today as well. And he's obviously playing every week for Bournemouth. So I'd say it's only a matter of time before he does get called into the senior squad. But he took the corner. Tyreek Wright with a lovely little cutback to Conor Coventry, something that I say they've worked on the training ground. And he tucked it away. Lovely Conor Coventry and 2-0. So brilliant start for Jim Crawford and his boys. They obviously came up short last year in the campaign, as we all know, under Stephen Kenny. But that's a really good start for them, and hopefully it's the start of something really exciting for the under-21s.
I had a bit of a laugh when I saw Mark McCadden tweeting that the match was entertaining, but not as entertaining as when Barry Ferguson gets his hands on Alan Cawley. His son Evan came on towards the end of the game. What did you say?
His son is the youngest player, I think, since Terry Dixon to play at 16. It's phenomenal, really. And obviously people will know this lad played against Chelsea when he was 14 for Bohemians, played in a league game, I think, at 15. Obviously went to Brighton, and since he's gone to Brighton, he's made great strides and he's performing in their 23s.
Played in the Carabao Cup.
Unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. With another young lad, Andrew Moran as well, who's worth a mention. But he came on today, and even in the space of 8 or 9 minutes, you could already see the potential that this lad has and why there's so much talk about him. Big physical presence up front, won a couple of headers, but also very good on the deck. And Adrian, who was commentating on the match with me, Adrian Eames, mentioned that obviously he's a big physical presence as well, like his dad was. And I says, yeah, but his dad used to try and kick you, whereas I don't think everyone would be trying to kick you. But no, it was a really good day for him as well. And he has Bohemians links, of course. Andy Lyons played, so did Ross Tierney. Ross Tierney was really good. Of course, they play for Bohemians. Brian Maher playing for Bray Wanderers. Jake O'Brien, who came through Cork City and recently signed with Crystal Palace, he played really well. So there was a good few, obviously, League of Ireland players playing three or four, but also Oisín McEntee played really well at the back. And yeah, fair play to the lads. It was a great start. And I say Jim Crawford, who I know really well, and John O'Shea is in with him, and Alan Reynolds, really good management team. And hopefully they can go on to something really promising.
We know that Stephen Kenny has a football philosophy and one that he wants to see reflected down through the underage ranks, and he's in regular communication with those underage coaches, and they're just trying to get everybody in the country playing football the way that they want to, so when players come through that they're able to slot into that senior team. Were you able to see some similarities in this style of play?
Absolutely, Marie, yeah. And it's a great point you make, because that's exactly what's happening. For people that don't know, there's continuity now between the senior team right down through the underage levels, and obviously Stephen is at the forefront of that. But as you say, he's in constant consultation with the likes of Jim, Tom Owen, Colin O'Brien, Paul Ozam, Jason Dunne, whoever it is, all the underage managers. And that's exactly what the teams are all trying to play, in a certain style, play a brand of football. And the key thing as well with it, Marie, you think of what Stephen's team at the moment, and obviously we're going to talk about it later, but people would have seen the game the other night. The amount of young lads that were involved in that game that are still eligible to play with the 21s. So the 21s could put out a really, really strong team. The likes of Troy Parrott, Aaron Connolly, Gavin Bazuno, but they're being fast-tracked through to the senior team because they're so good. But Jim is not afraid to fast track through lads, even 17s, 18s, like you mentioned, Evan Ferguson, 16, playing with the 21s. So that's exactly what's happening. There's a lot of talent at their disposal coming through. These things take time. You have to get behind, I suppose, whatever word you want to put on it, a project or whatever it is. But in terms of the time that it takes to obviously bring these lads through, you have to invest in that time and let people get behind it and support it, because believe me, there's a lot of good stuff going on behind the scenes.
Okay, we'll be chatting to Fergal Brennan, Alan, a little bit later about Stephen Kenny's Ireland team, but we are going to talk boxing now. Gavin Casey is with us on the line because Katie Taylor is putting her titles on the line against American Jennifer Han, her latest mandatory challenger. And Gavin Casey is in Leeds for the fight. Gavin, times are starting to change. You're away.
I can't believe it. If I ever have kids, Marie, I'm sure they'll ask me one day, where was the first place you went when travel restrictions were eased during the COVID pandemic? And I'm delighted to say I'll be telling them that I went to Leeds and I'm here now.
Don't be dissing Leeds, Gav. I lived in Leeds now for 2.5 years. A great spot.
It actually is a great spot. I tell you what, it exceeded my expectations totally. I felt a little bit guilty, actually. It's a lovely city. Great buzz ahead of this weekend as well. They've got their own hometown hero, Josh Warrington, fighting in a headliner at Headingley Stadium, which is the Rugby League stadium. So about 20,000 fans expected there. Katie is chief support, so you'd imagine probably 15 or 16,000 of those fans will have made their way in by that point. I haven't come across too many Irish people so far, actually, but I know that Leeds are kind of keen to adopt her in a way. Her father obviously hails from here. She's a Leeds United fan since childhood. I asked her yesterday, though, would she walk out wearing a Leeds jersey just to generate that little bit of extra buzz on her ring walk? And she was like, I don't know, it'd be a bit cheesy, would it? So I don't know. I think that's open to debate, but I think she's going to avoid that.
You could have planted the seed, Gav.
I know. Katie with ring walks, she doesn't even pick her own music. I think generally it's Brian Peters, a manager or a brother or whoever. It's just all of those little details don't concern her even remotely. She's just focused on what she has to do. So who she has to beat tomorrow is a woman by the name of Jennifer Han, mandatory challenger, as you said at the top there, Marie. Tough Texan woman, 5 years. She was the IBF featherweight champion. And I mean, tough in boxing terms, probably tough generally speaking as well. She had her second son only in February. She weighed about 210 pounds as recently as May, and she shed 75 pounds more actually, because she was well under the limit today, in order to fight for the undisputed lightweight title. So a roller coaster few months for Jennifer Han, and obviously if she can upset the apple cart tomorrow night, it'll be biblical stuff.
Do you think she will upset the apple cart, really, when you think of Katie's and her ability and just the fact that she even said that she wants to produce one of her best ever performances?
I don't think Han has the capability really to beat Taylor, and I say that for, I suppose, a number of reasons, really. First and foremost, I think Taylor is just better at pretty much everything there is to do in boxing. Like, not by miles in some departments, but by just enough. And if you look at Han's record, she's had one knockout in 18 victories. She doesn't really have game-changing power or fight-changing power. So if it's getting away from her early, and Taylor can certainly make that happen, it's difficult to see her landing a shot that sort of changes the momentum of the fight. And it's just difficult to find any areas in which Han can trouble Taylor. I think the best she can hope for is to just be awkward, frustrate her. And to be honest, and she wouldn't be the first one, but just hope that Taylor has actually grown old overnight. We haven't really seen too much evidence of that so far in a professional career. I mean, I don't think she's as electric quick as she used to be back in sort of 2012, her heyday, but she hasn't really lost even a yard, you know. And Han herself is 38, so there's a chance, I guess, that she could herself grow old overnight. There are a few variables on that front. I don't see a miracle upset happening, a miracle obviously from the American perspective. I think it's more of a routine defence for Taylor to kind of get out of the way and pave the way towards bigger nights. Like, we were speaking to Eddie Hearn yesterday, and I was just chatting to him before I came on with you guys here, and he's looking at Madison Square Garden, the big room upstairs, another 20,000 people, but this time Taylor headlining against Amanda Serrano, who's been kind of the white whale of her professional career so far. Maybe next April she might get a fight in before that as well, but I think this is just one you need to take the box with. It's a mandatory challenge, which means technically, if you don't fulfill it, they can take your belt, whoever the sanctioning body is. In this case, it's the IBF. And Taylor is very keen to hang on to all of those titles, because all of those titles together are what make the undisputed title, if you know what I mean.
Is Katie evolving as a fighter, do you think?
I think she's shown evidence in specific fights of evolution that was tailored towards that specific fight. I think in the Persoon rematch, we saw a marked difference in her performance in... I don't want to say in how carefully she boxed, but I guess in how technically she boxed versus her first fight with Persoon at Madison Square Garden, where, look, she arguably lost the fight. And blue in the face was saying, I don't think she actually lost, but I scored it a draw when I was in the arena, and I scored it a draw when I rewatched it, so I don't think she won either. I thought in the rematch she won fairly comprehensively in what was another kind of memorable, violent fight. But she showed certain moves in that fight that were so clearly designed to perform better the second time around. And she figured out, with her trainer, of course, Rafa Inamai, a couple of wrinkles to throw at Persoon that just, I suppose, stemmed her momentum, which she had built so capably the first time around. And we've seen definitely, I guess, combinations, different shots that Taylor wouldn't necessarily have had to throw as an amateur. She'll talk about that herself, how there are probably things she's learned that would be specific to the professional sport that she wouldn't necessarily have had to rely upon back in the day. So she has evolved, probably technically, in a way. It is a different sport, but, you know, you could make the argument then that I don't want to say she's devolved athletically, because it's just not that extreme, but she is 34, and this can't go on forever, as she said to us the other day.
She did say she's going to keep going until she's 40, though. That's 6 years. That's quite a long stint.
Yeah, it's funny. I
can't see it again, though.
Well, never say never, right? I think very often in a boxer's career, it takes somebody to put the hand on their shoulder and tell them they're really not as good as they thought they were. And of course, we're nowhere near that situation with Katie, but I hope we also don't ever get there where Eddie or Ross Inamoy or Brian Peters have to sort of inform her that actually she's not the fighter she once was. And usually, it really is the boxer who's the last person to notice that. It'll be apparent to anyone else before them. So the way she looks after herself, it's funny. She was telling us how Roy Keane is a favourite sports person, and obviously in his recent interview with Gary Neville, Roy Keane was talking about how going out back in the day had sort of maybe stifled his own career or shortened it, and various sort of yoga techniques and things like that, whereas Taylor has just been living the same life, the absolute cleanest lifestyle, for her entire life, and that does tend to extend careers. So could she go on for another 3 or 4 years? Absolutely. I just hope we don't get to a point where... we wish she didn't.
I think one of the things that will always stick with me from the pandemic and the lockdown is when Katie Taylor was interviewed during it, and she was saying, well, you know, people in lockdown. That's kind of been my life for, as you said, pretty much your whole life, which is pretty phenomenal. So it's on The Zone. It's not on Sky. It's the new streaming service. I'm seeing posters of her everywhere, which is brilliant. She really is front and centre for the launch of this new streaming service.
Yeah, it's a bit of a sea change. I suppose people would be typically accustomed to flicking on Sky Sports when Taylor is fighting, or I suppose quite regularly, in fairness, trying to buy a pay-per-view. This time around, it's a subscription service, a streaming service, The Zone, which has launched globally. I think it launched in about April time. I guess the idea behind it is that it eventually becomes a kind of a Netflix of sport. And in other countries, it has lots of different sporting competitions that they don't have the rights to quite yet in, say, Ireland and the UK. So in places like Germany, Italy, Canada, they have Champions League, Premier League, and so on. And their ambition is to basically take over sport across the world, or sports broadcasting, I should say. So they're using boxing as a vehicle with which to break into the UK/Irish market. They're pretty happy with how things are going, although they don't release their figures, so it's difficult to ascertain for certain. But yeah, Taylor is definitely one of the poster women, or sorry, the poster people, if that's a term, of this move. And even speaking to some of the executives at The Zone a few months back, they were speaking about the commercial importance of Taylor, not just for women's sports, but just for sport generally. They like the cut of her jib. They love dealing with her from the business point of view. I'm not sure how hands-on she is, but they like dealing with her team and basically just having her around. And listen, you've got one of the most electrifying, talented athletes on the planet, I guess. You would be pretty happy with that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that's for sure. So, Gav, give us a prediction.
You know, it's been 2.5 years since Taylor earned a stoppage win, and I actually think she might break that duck tomorrow night. I'd probably go later rounds Taylor by stoppage. Maybe I'm being a bit optimistic. She'll certainly win, but yeah, I fancy her to just be a little bit more violent, a bit more vicious tomorrow, and get the job done a little bit earlier.
Right. Well, you enjoy Leeds now. Your first trip since restrictions are lifting. At least you've got a lot to look forward to over the weekend, anyway.
100%. Thanks,
Melbury. Thanks, Gav. Talk to you again soon. Right, it is time to turn our attention to golf now. Leona Maguire is going to be on the big stage in the Solheim Cup this weekend, and she spoke to the media before making her debut tomorrow, starting with the nickname she's been given by her teammates.
The nickname is Mags for now.
I
don't know if it's set in stone, but that's what we're going with for now. In terms of what we need to do, I think we just need to play for each other. I think we've got a lot of great players, obviously a lot of people in really good form. Hopefully we can build off the momentum from the British Open. But yeah, I mean, everybody's getting along so well, and just getting the most out of each other and really rooting for each other and cheering each other on. We're going to have to be each other's number one fans this week, especially with not as many crowds in our favour, and just embracing that and everything that goes with it. So I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's a great team. It's a really strong team, and everybody's getting along really well.
Leona, what are you most anxious or nervous about in this first Solheim Cup experience, and what are you most looking forward to?
Yeah, I mean, everybody talks about the first tee, so there's definitely going to be some butterflies, I'm sure. Try and embrace it as much as I can, and the adrenaline lifting that goes with it, and it's just going to be a really cool experience. It's going to be like nothing else I've ever played before, I'm sure. Just excited to get going. I think there's been a lot of build up. We've had a lot of practice days already, more practice days than tournament days, which is a little weird. So just really, really looking forward to getting started now almost, and getting out there and competing. I love match play. So, just excited to get going. Two FM.
Game on 2FM. Welcome back. Now I am live in studio with Alan Cawley and joined on the line by Fergal Brennan. We're looking ahead to the Republic of Ireland versus Azerbaijan tomorrow. We heard Matt Doherty at the top of the show there, Alan, just saying how much he loves the fans and how brilliant it is to have them back. And he feels that when the fans are there, that his performance lifts.
Yeah, I think that's the natural reaction for anybody, Marie, you know, because they're all professionals. The entertainment industry, you're trying to put on a show to train all week, obviously, to go out and play in front of a crowd at the weekend. And you're naturally going to be lifted by, as I say, whether it's home fans supporting you and praising you and wanting you to do well, or even whether it's away fans giving you a little bit of stick and obviously you're trying to prove them wrong or whatever the case may be. So I think that's natural. I think it's probably more pertinent, though, the fact that tomorrow with the Irish team and a lot of these young Irish boys, and even Stephen, when he took over, obviously he was at the start of the pandemic. So we haven't had games with the crowds at Indy Aviva, and particularly for Stephen, but more so for some of the younger lads. So I think that's what makes it even more important, because obviously the last few weeks since sport has restarted and we've seen it in England, full crowds, full stadiums, we've almost gotten used to it again, and people back at matches. But I just think it's more important tomorrow for this match, the fact that obviously there was the few crowd, I think it was 8,000 at the game during the week, but the fact that they have two games now back in the Aviva in front of their home supporters, I'd say it's a big thing Stephen is trying to reinforce in the camp in terms of the performance he wants from the players in front of the fans, try to put on a show for them, whatever the case may be, whatever lines you want to use. But the fact that they'll get such a lift off that as well, and particularly the younger lads, so I think it's even more important this weekend just purely for that reason.
And Fergal, it's important as well that they go out and win the game, because we are kind of celebrating a bit of a moral victory, but it's because the performance was so impressive and so unexpected as well. And there's so many question marks over this team and over Stephen Kenny heading into this run of games. It feels like they've answered their critics with that performance against Portugal, but the reality is they didn't win the game. They need to now go and start winning games.
Yeah, the performance obviously the other night against Portugal, as you say, has answered a lot of critics, and it's answered a lot of questions about the direction that Stephen Kenny's taken the team in, exactly how he can transport his ideas and the kind of theory of what he's trying to do into performances on the pitch. Obviously, we're talking a matter of 2, 3, 4 minutes away from being one of the biggest results in the history of Irish football in terms of particularly qualifying for major international tournaments. These two games now, Azerbaijan tomorrow and then Serbia next week, they are must win. Looking at the numbers in terms of the table, in terms of qualification, it is a hell of an uphill task. It's not completely out of the realms. I wouldn't quite say it's, you know, a miracle is needed. I know a few people have mentioned that. I don't think it's quite at that stage yet. There's still a lot of games and a lot of football to be played. But this time next week, on the back of Azerbaijan tomorrow and then Serbia on Tuesday night, it needs to be 6 points. It needs to be Ireland, Stephen Kenny, the players, putting themselves in a position where Serbia are looking over their shoulders. Because if they're not, Serbia just know they need to keep it steady in their games in October and November, and they're through, and Ireland, unfortunately, will miss out. It needs to be 6 points. So I'm very confident going into tomorrow with Azerbaijan. They're obviously pointless so far in the group, the same as Ireland, but it's a very different story with them in comparison to Ireland, and the performances, obviously, that Ireland have turned in, and particularly against Portugal the other night. 6 points or nothing for me in the next two games. It is as simple as that.
Yeah, well, we're all hoping for that anyway. Look, Stephen Kenny has been handed a bit of a boost with the return of Callum Robinson and Alan Brown into the squad. Do any of them come into the team, Al?
I think Robinson has a real good chance of coming into the team. Connolly, as we know, injured, but even if Connolly wasn't, I think he might come in anyway. Purely for the fact that I think it suited Connolly in the game the other night, because we were always going to try and hit Portugal on the counter-attack, which plays to Connolly's strengths in terms of his pace and getting you up the pitch. And he did that really well throughout the match the other night. It was just when the chances fell to him that he obviously wasn't capable of tucking them away. And you can go back to the fact that is he not playing regularly football or whatever the case may be, but he didn't tuck them away. But you look at Callum Robinson to come into the team tomorrow, or possibly a try part, purely for the fact that you'd like to think the pattern of the game tomorrow would be totally different, in the sense that we're the ones who'd be trying to break Azerbaijan down, and we should be dictating the play and obviously dominating possession and creating chances. And if we do create chances for the likes of a Parrott, a finisher, or the likes of Callum Robinson, who we've already seen, even under Stephen, but also his club form at West Brom, he's obviously has an eye for a goal. He started the season really well. You'd like to think that himself or Parrott will tuck them away. So I was probably inching towards Parrott earlier in the week. The fact that Robinson now has come back into the fold as the COVID thing has kind of cleared up or whatever, and the uncertainty around that, and he's eligible to play, I think he'll come into the team.
Fergal, it does feel like, okay, it's only one performance, but if you're looking at a jigsaw puzzle on what was missing, when you look around the pitch and how well Gavin Bazunu did and how well Ireland defended and just the work rate in the middle of the field, Ida as well, he did his job pretty well, but they still need somebody to start finishing, to start scoring the goals.
Of course, yeah, and you look at the performance the other night, all 11 of the starting team deserve to keep their place against Azerbaijan. I think, as Alan mentioned, the only reason someone like a Callum Robinson would come in is to freshen things up and give a slightly different focus, because Azerbaijan are going to play it a completely different way than Portugal did. Ultimately, international games are so tight, not as kind of free and easy to get a goal as it might be at club level. There's not as many chances to kind of fix a situation. You get games shoved into a really short space of time, and three games obviously in this international window is a perfect example of that. And you look at the options, Parrott and Robinson have both started the season well, as as Alan points out, but Robinson does have that little bit more experience. He's obviously played Premier League football as well. I would be erring more towards him. I think ultimately it comes back to the same argument, and it kind of goes back almost a decade or so. Martin O'Neill used to bemoan the lack of Robbie Keane or a similar player to Robbie Keane. We're seeing a move away from that in international football and more of an even goal spread across a front three or a front four. Yes, someone does need to start popping up with goals, but if chances are being created, I think it's a far more competent strategy to look at it and say we've got Robinson, Parrott, Connolly, Doherty coming in from out wide that can get a goal, rather than just putting it all on the shoulders of one player. And particularly if you're throwing it all on the shoulders of Ida or Parrott, Robinson you'd expect would be able to shoulder that a bit more. He's older, he's been around the block a bit longer than those two. But in terms of performances, you can't really take any of that 11 out. It would just be basing on how Azerbaijan are going to set up, and if those two or three chances that are going to be dropping Ireland's way during the game, Robinson probably is the most likely to put them away.
Alan, we've spoken so often now on this show about the League of Ireland and changing the perception of the league and what needs to be done. We haven't really found a definitive answer, but one thing that will definitely help is the fact that people are going to know that Gavin Bazunu came through Shamrock Rovers, Jamie McGrath came through the League of Ireland, Liam Scales has gone from Shamrock Rovers to Celtic, that the league are producing players now that are able to perform at the top level and to play for their countries.
I think even if you go back to the Euro 2016, and do you remember that famous photograph that they put up with all the lads in their League of Ireland jerseys, James McLean, Wes Houlihan, I think there was eight in that group, in that photo, and that was one third of the squad. So that's been something that's been building now over the last number of years, Marie. So off the back of that, obviously it gets highlighted more with social media and all this kind of stuff, and the word gets out there a lot more for people who maybe not go to League of Ireland matches like ourselves or whatever. But it is important. I think it's also important the fact that the pathway and the route for the lads now is slightly different from what it was a few years ago, in the sense that when I went away, I wouldn't say everyone was going away, but that was the route the majority of people were going away. And you would have lads like, as I say, my underage teams, 9, 10, 11 of us, whatever, after the year or whatever, you would go to England and you go on trials, and as I say, 70, 80% of us would stay in England or whatever, the lads that were lucky enough to get a contract. Nowadays, you look at it with, I suppose, the structures they're trying to implement here with the national underage leagues and lads that are coming through that route. And it's probably been more beneficial to lads that have stayed here and played and gone into a first team here and played maybe 50 games, 75 games, like, as you say, a Jamie McGrath, like Liam Scales. They're playing men's football, Shawnee Maguire, whatever the case may be, and then you go away. And I would have always kind of gone with the notion that, no, you need to go 15, 16, whatever. I've gone completely away from that now, Marie. I would much, if I was speaking to a parent now or trying to advise someone on what to do with their young lad, I would be absolutely recommending stay here, go through the route, an underage system route here with a team, a club or whatever. Because if you're good enough, you'll come through anyway. Go in and play with a first team, go into men's football rather than kind of glorified friendly football, what it is in England now at under 23 level, and play here, play your 50 games, your 75 games. Because when a club comes looking for you, like a Liam Scales at the moment, you're going into their first team, you're not going into their under 23s or the reserves or whatever the case may be. So I think it's a much better route for them now. We obviously mentioned at the top of the show, we covered the under 21s. There was four starters that are playing here in the League of Ireland that played in that game today as well. So it's more common now, you see it in the under 21s. You see it also, Brexit has come into it, so there's a lot more lads, and the onus is on us now, Marie, to put structures in place that if lads are staying here, that we have the right facilities and the right structures and the right coaching methods and all that kind of thing, coach education, whatever the case may be, that we are giving these lads the best opportunity possible. Because for years we depended and we relied on England, and it was a lazy approach and a lazy attitude from us just to think, well, we let them go off to England now and they'll finish off their development. That's gone now. Their lads are staying here. We have to develop our own players here now, and we need to get our house in order, and that becomes facilities and investment from the government. All you can go down a whole wide range and kind of broaden the whole thing out, but ultimately that's exactly what it's needed. And I think, to be fair with Stephen there, he recognises this, the underage managers recognise that, and I think it's going to be a lot more fruitful for lads in the years to come. But of course it is going to take that time for them all to come through and develop.
Yeah, and it was interesting to see when the Republic of Ireland under 17 team was announced by Colin O'Brien, that there was a note in it about Brexit and how they're making huge efforts to have lots of home based squad. It's a, that under 17 squad is very much home based, and with Brexit situation, that that's where they're going to be picking their players for now, because their players are going to be at home.
Absolutely, Marie. And as I say, when I was involved, it was all, we were lads that were gone to England, and it was, the squad was made up of, like, Wes Hoolan couldn't get in our squad. Wes Hoolan, our hero that we all love. Wes couldn't get in our squad because we were all lads that had gone away and were playing in England, and they were just picking 16, 20 lads that, because you were maybe playing in England. Whereas now, as you say, the majority of lads are playing here with St. Pat's under 17s or 19s, Bohemians, whoever the case may be, and eventually making their way through. And I think it's better as well for us, Marie, as a nation. You know, you can't be relying on other countries. For years, we've done that. We need to do our own thing now in terms of obviously trying to develop the players as best we can. And there is good things happening. It won't happen overnight. It won't happen in a year or two. It may take 5, 6, 7 years before you see the fruits of this. But good things are beginning to happen here. And I can slowly see things turning across the board, not just on the football side of things. I think off the pitch as well, in terms of the FAI, for all the stick and a lot of the mismanagement that went on there has us in the mess that we're in as well, Marie. There's no point in denying that. But I think slowly but surely that's turning now in terms of the people that are involved there as well.
Yeah, and I think the performance against Portugal does really help as well, with just the feel-good factor that is around Irish football.
I think on that as well, though, Marie, sorry, the last thing. The game tomorrow, I don't think people should just think we'll rock up and beat Azerbaijan 3 or 4-0.
Come on.
coming off the back of the performance tonight, it's really important, because there'd be tired bodies there from the game the other night. Obviously, the recovery that Stephen would have wanted in the day on Thursday. I think they only travelled back today, so they were training earlier, and then the game tomorrow. So it's a quick turnaround. Obviously, they should be beating Azerbaijan, and I fully expect them to. But don't be thinking we'll just rock up and it'll be an easy stroll.
Fergal, that's an important point, all right, because a lot of the players haven't been playing a huge amount as well. So to go from maybe not having that first team action to having to play 3 games in a short period of time, there is a worry there about how the bodies are going to be able to cope with it.
Yeah, and that'll be part of the message, I think, that Stephen will be getting across to them today, tomorrow, ahead of the game. And as Alan points out, if you go with that mentality of we just have to turn up, kick off, we'll win 2-3-0 and that's the end of it, Ireland could find themselves on the end of a bit of a disappointing result. And particularly when you add in the factor of the crowds being back, fans cheering and looking to power on, that can bring a different type of pressure to the players out on the pitch. And I think the issue of tiredness obviously does come into it. Most of the players, including the squad, have only played in fits and starts at the beginning of the season, and that's obviously a factor that will probably come into a bit more relevance further down the line this season. But the focus just has to be on these 2 games in front of us now. That performance the other night against Portugal, harnessing everything that was good about it, harnessing the first 89 minutes of that for tomorrow and then against Serbia on Tuesday, is absolutely vital. From Stephen, from the coaching staff, all the way through the players, the senior players turning around to the younger lads and saying, listen, I know that happened, but that happens once in a career, that a player like Ronaldo steps up and does that. You should be incredibly proud of everything you've done. Now go out and do that again, twice more, and we've got a chance of getting back in and potentially qualifying for the World Cup.
Yeah, it sounds great, all right, Al, doesn't it?
It does. I love your optimism, Fergal.
Do you think we're going to qualify?
No. but I agree with Fergal in the sense that I don't think it's dead in the water just yet. And if you were to put in the 2 good victories, obviously starting tomorrow, like they have to approach tomorrow like they're getting ready to play Portugal. That has to be the attitude, Marie, because if you go out tomorrow a little bit after the Lord's Mayor show and just rock up and be going through the motions and all and whatever the case may be and feeling a bit sorry for yourself because of what happened the other night.
At least there'll be fans there to let them know if that happens.
Absolutely, and that's why that's key as well. But I think Stephen will be reiterating that, in the fact that this game is so important tomorrow, and even for him to get a victory. We thought the other night was going to be the game he'd get the victory, and it would have been humongous because of the opposition. It'll be every bit as important tomorrow just to get the victory for him, even though it's Azerbaijan. So I think that's hugely important. Then if you were to carry that into Tuesday, as Fergal said, with real optimism, the Serbia game, because we gave them a brilliant game and should have beat them in the previous fixture. If you were to pick up 3 points and obviously have 6 at the end of this campaign, people would have been over the moon with 6 points out of 9 with these 3 games, because everybody thought we were going to lose to Portugal. So if you were to pick up 6 out of 9 and carry that forward, now we're probably getting a little bit ahead of ourselves here, Marie. Just get the 3 tomorrow and that'll be it.
Well, that's probably a good way of looking at it. Fergal Brennan, thank you so much for joining us. I'll stay with us because we have a little bit more to get through later in the show, but now it's time for a break.
Game on 2FM.
So the Paralympics are starting to wind down, but Ireland are still winning medals. Katie George Dunleavy and Eve McChrystal won their second gold medal of Tokyo 2020 when the duo triumphed in the B road race at the Fuji International Speedway. Just before their medal presentation, they spoke to Darren Frehel.
Katie George, that is, we're out of breath here watching you guys. How are you feeling after that?
Oh, I'm emphatic. The road race is my favourite, and I've always wanted to win that at the Paralympics. So to actually get that, you know, in London, I was fifth in the road race, and then I'm in silver in Rio, and to win it now, I'm in Tokyo. It's dream country.
To do it in the way you guys did it, like, that was an incredible race to watch, like the three teams in there to the last 500 metres.
Yeah, that was a really challenging race. We were, you know, the Swedes were really technically very good, and on the downhills we were kind of losing ground on them if they were ahead of us, and we had to do a lot of effort to kind of get back. So it was like a lot of on-off efforts, and really draining as the laps went on. But there was the chance there where we had to take it, and that was to just attack really on that last climb coming in, and we did, and we got a gap, and I can't believe it held up to the line now. I was fading quickly there.
Eve, I think your face says it all. That smile, could it get any bigger?
I can't believe it, because I found, as a pilot, I found that course so stressful in the rain. And as Katie said, we were just losing ground on the descent. And then the climb, I found it tough because of the on-off during the race. So I just said to Katie, I think about 2K to go, I said, we're going to have to kick the last little drag up, because the British bike, they're current world champions. I didn't want to take them to the line, so I had to chance it. We chanced it, we got a gap, and we just went for it. I cannot believe we did that, because I found that really stressful, that race.
And Eve, can I ask you, the course, we've been here all day, we've seen how challenging it is. It's really dangerous, in fact. There's been so many people coming off their bikes today.
Yeah.
And then the weather, it's been a torrential downpour for what, maybe 70% of that race?
Okay, I didn't really feel the rain that much. I was just concentrating on staying upright. And the Swedish girls really put it to us on the corners, and tried my best to stay as much as I could. But I cannot believe we're after winning double Paralympic champions. Yeah. Oh my God of almighty. Never in my wildest dreams.
I know, has it hit in yet, Katie George?
No, not quite. I just had faith. I know we were... we were losing ground and having to do a lot of effort on the technical side, so we did our best at the end of the day, and we wanted to stay upright, of course. But I knew our fitness and the training that we've done. I just had a feeling that we would still, hopefully, you know, get them, and we did. You know, we won. So I was thinking, you know, towards the end, I knew we would get a medal out of the three, but I still wanted that gold, and I knew, and I really wanted it, and so I'm so glad. Delighted we got it.
So it's a third medal for you, Katie George, for you as a team, okay? And I was just doing a little tot there. If you were a country yourselves, let's just call you maybe, you know, the Republic of Dunleavy and McChrystal, okay?
Yeah.
You'd be halfway, you'd beat half the countries at this Paralympic Games just with those three medals alone, which is phenomenal,
isn't
it?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah,
not bad.
Oh, Dunleavy. Yeah,
McChrystal. Guys, just before we go up, are you able to put into perspective what this achievement, or is it going to take some time to check in maybe with you guys?
I think it's going to take time, actually.
I'm just so happy that we could do that. Like, the amount of work that the team behind us have done to get us here has been phenomenal, and I just want to thank them so much, especially our coach. I know we've said it 1,000 times, but we really, really mean that. And to our families at home, just can't wait to get home. I miss my kids so much. Ava, Nessa, hello. And I can't wait to get
home.
Has
the sacrifice been worth it?
Now it has, but it's very tough on the journey to here. But now it has.
It does. All the sacrifices and the hard work, the time away from home, it makes it worth it. You have these pet medals forever, you know, and you can share it with your friends and family, and share, you know, just let, you know, the joy of it, let others enjoy that as well. And it's been worth it.
go and enjoy the moment. The rain is still coming down here, believe it or not, under Mount Fuji. What a day, but you know what? It's going to live long in the memory for everyone, including you guys. So enjoy the moment. Get those medals.
Thank you. 2FM.
Game on 2FM. Welcome back. I'm delighted to be joined now by our horse racing expert, Jane Mangan. Jane, before we get into the actual racing, some good news for racing fans this week. There are going to be more crowds at racing, and I guess everyone will have particular interest in the Irish Champions weekend.
For sure. After 18 long months, Marie, and much lamenting between you and I, we have people back at the races. 4,000 people have got the green light to attend the Curragh and Leopardstown next weekend for Irish Champions weekend. Look, Micheál Martin made his speech, and I think across all sectors, I think everybody in this country was relieved with what he had to say. And I think racetracks in particular, because we've had quite a lean period. We have missed the fans. And I think what's most important when we do get people back, that it is enjoyable, and what a spectacle we have on show for them at Leopardstown and the Curragh Cross Champions weekend. Of course, the Listowel Harvest Festival is on the horizon as well this month. They've been given the green light for 2,000 people. Some members of the public might think, why are Leopardstown and the Curragh having 4,000 and Listowel having 2,000? Well, Listowel is actually going to be an outdoors-only festival, whereas Leopardstown and the Curragh have implemented the vaccine cert for those who want to go indoors. So it's a much needed move in the right direction. Of course, everybody will be free as birds from October 22nd. But until then, we have thousands of people back at the races. And with the All-Ireland and the Camogie All-Ireland and everything on next weekend, Dublin is going to be the place to be.
I was going to say, Jane, I must now go out and actually meet you at a racetrack someday, because we haven't seen each other in so long. But not that weekend, because as you said, the All-Ireland football final is on and the Camogie, but still at the same time, even though that is on, Irish Champions weekend is going to be box office.
It really is, and as I said, it is important when people do get back, the racing fans enjoy themselves, and I think the Irish racing fans in particular, when they do get to Leopardstown and the Curragh, they're going to be in for a real treat, because on the Saturday, the Champions Stakes, the Irish Champions Stakes, always one of the best 10 furlong races run in the world. You have Tarnawa, the older filly that won the Breeders' Cup last year, taking on St. Mark's Basilica and Poetic Flair, two of the top three-year-olds of their generation this year. 10 furlongs, it'll be a small field, but who needs too many runners when you have three horses of this quality? That's just one of the races. The Moyglare, you'll have Agartha. The National Stakes, we could have Point Lonsdale, and the Matron Stakes, Mother Earth as well. So there's so much to look forward to next weekend. But there's some racing happening between now and then.
So this weekend, Jane, if racing fans are looking for somewhere to turn their attention to, what is on?
Well, the Haydock Sprint Cup tomorrow in the UK is definitely the star race there. And the star of the show could be Starman. He's the July Cup winner from earlier this year. He's got to beat Creative Force, Arc Power, Emiratiana and Glen Shield. But Starman for Ed Walker, he's been a slow burner. He's still quite lightly raced and he's still quite unexposed. And I think he can bounce back from the defeat he suffered over 5 furlongs in the Nunthorpe. And then, of course, on Sunday, what looked like it was going to be one of the best races run in France, the Prix de Moulin, has 6 runners, and interestingly enough, only 1 French runner. Baïd, the young pretender, the unexposed horse, the unbeaten horse from William Haggis. He's never actually competed outside of Group 3 company, so it's his time to shine and prove he is of top quality. He's going to have to take on Snow Lantern, Order of Australia, Lopi Fernandez, November from Germany, and Victor Ladorum is André Farbe's representative. The only French horse in a French Group 1. Quite an unusual thing to see.
Very much so. Well, Jane Mangan, thank you for bringing us up to speed on all of that. Enjoy the weekend and we will catch you again very, very soon. Alan, it is a busy evening in the Airtricity League as well. Dundalk and Waterford is one that will catch a lot of attention, because Dundalk are in the playoff position and in a real fight for the remainder of the season.
And I think they are in a real fight for the remainder of the season, Marie. For anybody who thinks they're too good to go down, or those phrases that you would have heard over previous years with different teams, no matter what league, they're actually in a real fight. They're struggling now. They do have games in hand, but if they were to lose tonight, they'd be under serious pressure. And to be fair to Waterford, they've really turned things around under Mark Burcham, and they're on a great run at the moment, and obviously still in the quarterfinal of the FAI Cup as well. So that's a really tough game away to Waterford, and obviously Dundalk lost last week to Drogheda as well, so they're looking to rectify that. But it's a tough game with Waterford.
Shamrock Rovers will be back in action as well. They had a double disappointment with Europe and with the Cup as well, losing to Bowes. So they're taking on Finn Harps. Danny Mandrow did get a suspension after his reaction to the Bowes fans last weekend. But, you know, they do need to get back to winning ways.
Absolutely, yeah, because it was a disaster of a week, really. Of course, going out of Europe, giving themselves a mountain to climb, really, in Europe. But they still had, I suppose, some slim chance of going through, and they were quite hopeful that they would still go through, but they went out on a bit of a whimper. And then obviously the game in the FAI Cup against Bohemians at the weekend, and well beaten. Bohemians were terrific, as we know, so they went out of the FAI Cup as well. So everything is reliant on the league now, and obviously they were the favourites to win the league at the start. I think they should be much further ahead. I think they're making hard work in heavy weather of this league, and it's a tough game again tonight going up to Finn Harps, because Finn Harps are probably the form team in the league, and they beat Derry in the Cup last week. So Finn Harps have had a great run of it over the last 3 or 4 weeks, so that's a really tough game for Shamrock Rovers. But as you rightly say, they have to get back on track and they need to get a win.
Yeah, well, they're going to be doing it without Liam Scales as well, a player that has been so central to everything that's been good about them this season. Richie Towles struggling for a little bit of form as well, so it's not really moving in the right direction for them.
Yeah, well, it was an interesting stat last week, even when I was in at the game with Bohemians, and Bohemians obviously have played with such youthful exuberance, and they have a lot of young lads, and of course the lads that were playing with the 21s today, and they play with that kind of sense of adventure as well. Shamrock Rovers had 8 lads and that 11 started last week were over the age of 30, and it looked like that, Marie. They actually looked like they were heavy-legged and kind of flagging and a bit flat. Now, that could be coming off the back of, obviously, the European game they played as well. But that's some stat, really, when you think about it. Like, they get a lot of praise and talk about their academy, but there's not really any young lads coming through the academy. The young lad, Idemo, that scored in the European game, came on and came on in the game last week, and he actually added a bit of life to them when he came on. But just in terms of, as I say, a freshening up for that team, because I know they're experienced lads and very good players, don't get me wrong, the lads that are over 30, but you could just see that in the team that it nearly needed a bit of freshening up. So that's a huge game for them tonight, obviously away to Finn Harps, and a difficult one.
Do you think they need to be hanging on to their players instead of selling them on? So, like, they obviously lost a couple of big ones last year with the likes of Jack and Aaron McAniff, and then obviously Liam is gone, and you know, these are players that are always going to be really hard to replace.
Well, especially Jack and Aaron McAniff, I mentioned it numerous times, you won't replace them. They were the two best players in the league last year, and they were two of the best players we've seen in the league in a long time. They're outstanding, those two. It's very hard to replace them. But they did sign Mandrew and Chris McCann, and anyone that becomes available, they tend to have first dibs on, kind of thing. They nearly get them.
But you know what I mean, though? When you're building a team and you're starting to go well and you have momentum and you've got an established...
I think on those ones, though, McAniff and Jack Byrne, I think they're impossible to hang on to.
And Scales.
And then Scales this year, because if Celtic come calling, Shamrock Rovers can't hold on to Scales. And I think, to be fair to Stephen Bradley, he'd be realistic enough to know that, and he'd understand that. And Scales then, as a player and in his own personal development, will want to go. He's not going to stay with Shamrock Rovers when he can go to Celtic. So it depends on the instance.
When you look at Jack, though, so Jack, for example, now is without a club.
But that's a personal decision from Jack, and I'm sure he was keen to go at the time, which he was, and he was thinking, I'm in the international squad. Now he's in limbo land. And I said this when Jack went away. We love Jack. When Jack went, Jack was the talk of this place. He was the talk of the town. Everybody was on about him, Marie. To be an international squad named, and everybody arguing, why isn't Jack in? Why isn't Jack in? Everyone will see what he's doing every week. There hasn't been a word about Jack in 6 months. And I feel for him now when it looks like his contract's going to be terminated. There's talk about him going to a club in America. And I'd love to, if I was to sit down with him privately, I'd say, he'd nearly say, look, it's a tough one, because at the time Mick McCarthy's the manager and he's probably telling him, come and you'll be playing every week and we want you and all. And then Mick McCarthy leaves it a couple of days later. So it's really been tough on Jack, you know.
Okay, well, it's probably a debate for another day. And as you said, Al, things are starting to change. We're going to get to a stage where maybe people do want to stay here and they don't want to.
Yeah, and if we ever get to that, Marie, that's going to be amazing. That's what we want.
Yep. Okay, well, that is all we have time for. We got through so much. We'll be back on Monday. We'll have Nadine Doherty looking back on all of the action from the ladies' football final. Alan, you might come back in and we'll have a look back at Azerbaijan as well. We've Jason Smith on his brilliant performances at the Paralympics, and we're also going to talk to Shamie O'Shea
and Ruby as well. Surely after the game the other night, now he might be beginning to turn with Stephen Kenny. We'll ask him that on Monday.
Well,
night.
Conveniently, Ruby won't be here, so we'll get him again.
Game on 2FM.